baiting of deer and elk briefing and public hearing. Again, Dr. Nelson is up. This will take a little bit longer.
Thank you, Chair. Members of the Commission, again, for the record, my name is Jerry Nelson. I'm the Deer and Elk Section Manager for the Department, and I want to brief you on this agenda item relating to the baiting of deer and elk for hunting. Some of the background on this issue, as we were beginning our three-year package process just about 10 months ago at the very beginning, the Commission requested that deer and elk baiting be part of the three-year package discussion, that we put that out before the public and have the public conversation and the public debate about this topic. It was presented before the public at our public meetings going around the state this last summer. We also received input through the website in our scoping and comment process, which was an open portal to the public to give us their ideas on all of the topics, including this one. We also did a random survey of deer hunters and elk hunters. The survey base were licensed deer hunters and elk hunters from the state of Washington. That random telephone survey was conducted by Responsive Management, a company that does these types of natural resource types of surveys for a lot of state and federal agencies. Excuse me. And then we also have a public input step when the rules are filed and are made public, the CR 102, Code Revisor's documents. We received an additional 1,600 or more, actually more, it's probably closer to 1,750 comments received when the proposed seasons were filed. So on all of that input that we received from the public, in the non-random website portal where folks were giving us their ideas on the topics, the majority favored no change to the rules as they stand right now. About 15% favored a ban on baiting, but did not want to include agricultural operations, hayfields, orchards, etc. Another 14% favored the ban for on baiting for deer and elk, but wanted to impose that on professional guides and outfitters, folks that are making a living on guiding hunting, and also suggested limits on the amount of bait that could be used, and that was 14%. And then a much smaller 8% favored an outright ban on baiting for deer and elk. In the random telephone survey that was conducted by Responsive Management, of the deer hunters that were polled, 59% of the deer hunters opposed or strongly opposed the use of bait for deer hunting. 21% of the deer hunters they spoke to either supported or strongly supported baiting. And kind of surprising, 21% of deer hunters were either neutral or just had no opinion on the topic. So of the elk hunters that were contacted, 68% opposed or strongly opposed baiting. 14% were supportive or strongly supported baiting for elk. And then, again, a bit of a surprise, 19% of the elk hunters were either neutral or had no opinion on this topic. And then coming to the input that came to us after the filing of the proposed rules that are in front of you, 87% of the people commenting were against one or all of the proposed new restrictions and preferred status quo as the rules stand now. Almost 6% of those commenting were somewhat in favor of the proposed options that were put out, but they also had a lot of comments on modifying those or limiting those in a variety of different fashions. And those suggested modifications were quite varied. And then 7.5% of those commenting on the filed rules were in favor of one or more of the proposed new restrictions. When we wrote these rules, we did this in such a way that we wanted to give the commission as much decision space as possible. So we wanted to provide a spectrum, a continuum of various options. And so the rules that you see before you were written in a fairly large group fashion. There were more drafts than what you see before you, some that were discussed and debated and eliminated. We worked with our enforcement program, working through these as well, because we're very cognizant that we don't want to propose any rules that are difficult to enforce. And so we got that help from enforcement. We got additional help from the AG's office and also from our rules coordinator. And even though we were able to develop the options that are before you, our enforcement program still has some concerns about all three options. So I wanted to give you that input here. This is their sort of their formal opinion on what challenges would be presented to them with these various rules. On the first rule on 078, the complete ban rule, they felt like there still needed to be some sort of an exemption for firearm restriction areas and urban growth areas to keep that harvest and keep using hunting as a tool to manage deer and elk, but keeping that management and that harvest fairly focused. On both the rules 079 and 088, the volume restriction and the complete ban rule, both of those have 10-gallon limit pieces to the rule, and they felt that that would be relatively challenging for them to enforce a volume rule. It's difficult to tell when bait volume actually constitutes a violation. I told the Wildlife Committee the other night that there was some discussion about how we would get enforcement agents to actually effectively measure those volumes. And they gave us an example of a violation right now that's presenting some challenges, a rule that's already on the books, and that's a rule that pertains to littering on department lands. And the amount of volume in the litter dictates how severe the violation is. And so for one volume, the violation is only an infraction, but then another larger volume would be a misdemeanor, but then even a larger volume than that would be a gross misdemeanor. And so they have a bit of a challenge just getting to the point of measuring those volumes and figuring out just what kind of a violation that is that they need to cite. They also mentioned that the 10-gallon volume limits for these two rules would probably be difficult for prosecution once they get to the courtroom. It would be a proof issue that could be challenging. On all of the rules, they expressed concerns about issues going on to private land, and this relates to doing work that requires warrants, surveillance, probable cause, all of those things they felt would be kind of challenging when it came to enforcing any of these rules. And they also expressed the concern that it might create unnecessary conflicts with landowners. They really do their best to try to keep good relations with landowners, and they felt that that might be pretty challenging for them. I know I'm breaking the rules.
Is that a gross?
No.
It's under 10 gallons.
No, they just take away my birthday. We also received input from the Game Management Advisory Council. The GMAC discussed baiting, the topic of baiting, at both their December 6th and their March 7th meetings. And we really want to thank the GMAC for their work on this. They really functioned the way an advisory council is supposed to function. The GMAC had a very thorough discussion about this, an intensive, passionate debate back and forth about all of the pluses and minuses of baiting, and it was very good to see that in action, and we thank them for that. At the end of the day on March 7th, they took a vote and they developed a formal stance that they wanted to share with the commission, and you can read that here. And basically that formal stance says that they are not in favor of making any kind of rule changes and would like to keep the rules as they stand currently when it comes to baiting for deer and elk. And their rationale and reasons for that included their perceived impacts on allocation between the three user groups, modern, archery, and muzzleloader. They had concerns about impacts to hunter retention and recruitment, the enforceability of the rules, and the effects on selectivity. And that vote was 17 in favor of, 0 opposed, and 1 abstain. So that was a pretty strong statement from the GMAC. So in all of the public meetings, the written comment that we've received, these are some of the primary reasons that we hear from folks who are against the use of bait for hunting deer and elk. They cite reasons of fair chase. They cite unfair advantages over hunters that choose not to use bait. Concerns expressed about concentrating animals in places where neighbors don't want those concentrations. They talk about luring animals away from their own properties that was formerly perceived as better hunting, and those landowners felt like that had been diminished because of baiting nearby. And of course, there's the potential for spreading disease and the potential for negative impacts to habitat by congregating animals. And I guess I would just throw out that Mr. Marsh, who was up here earlier, I would also say that right now we don't have any evidence or anything quantified that either of those two things are happening. Those folks who were expressing their opinions in favor of using bait to hunt deer and elk mentioned some of the following: being more selective in their harvest, the ability to lure animals out of difficult security cover, being able to hunt smaller acreages successfully, especially in places like those urban and suburban interfaces, or just folks who have somewhat smaller properties that they're allowed to hunt on. Improving the probability of a clean kill and reducing the risk of wounding or losing animals, those two really go hand in hand. The others, enhancing the hunting experience of youth hunters and first-time hunters, that was expressed a lot by folks in terms of hunter recruitment and retention. Facilitating the hunting experience for senior hunters or hunters with disabilities that otherwise wouldn't be able to hunt. This was brought up a lot. A lot of folks felt like they had senior hunters or disabled hunters that if they felt the the ability to bait was restricted or removed, that those folks that they were assisting in their hunting wouldn't be able to hunt anymore. And then the opinion expressed a lot was just, don't unnecessarily restrict my hunting opportunities. That was a common theme as well. And so from the department standpoint, this is a social issue. It's not a natural resource issue, at least at this time. Possible policy options that we're bringing forward for the commission to consider are a no change to the rules and retaining things as they are right now. The newly proposed rule 079, which would limit the amount of bait that can be used. New rule 088, which would be a restriction on baiting, but would provide exceptions for user groups like youth, senior, or disabled, and specific properties, urban interface, and places where landowner permission, with an additional limit on the volume of the bait allowed. And then 078, which would be strictly a complete ban on the use of baiting, but would not include agricultural operations such as livestock, mineral block distribution, hay fields, crop fields, orchards, that sort of stuff. And that's all spelled out in the rule for you to review. And so with that, I'll try to answer any of the questions that you have.
Thank you, Jerry.
Questions?
Okay, well, we have a number of public that wish to testify. So, again, I will call you up two at a time and three-minute limits. So we'll start with John Andrews and Bobby. BJ.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, new commissioner, Dr. Thornburg. My name is John Andrews, if I didn't already state that. I am opposed to the baiting of deer and elk for purposes of hunting. Support option four that you just saw, the complete ban. I believe it is contrary to all the elements of fair chase, which sportsmen should adhere to while hunting. I first observed baiting years ago when it was commonly used during the late whitetail archery season. Then it appeared in the early archery seasons and late whitetail rifle seasons. In my opinion, it's greatly increased in recent years, especially in late rifle seasons and especially in the four-point units where there's a lot of trophy bucks to pursue. This is a very effective way to hunt mature whitetail bucks. It's not complicated. Does and yearling bucks readily come to bait. Mature bucks generally don't use it during the daytime, but they will follow does into a bait station during the rut, and they'll come into bait after rut when they're trying to replenish energy stores. It doesn't seem right or ethical to me that mature bucks or any deer or elk should survive their first year, which is very hard as a fawn or a calf, survive winters, survive disease, predators, accidents, fair chase hunting methods, and then be lured into a bait station to be shot or arrowed. It just doesn't seem right. Some sportsmen and guides say baiting is a good way to make a clean shot, and if this practice isn't broken, don't fix it. However, I think it is broken because of the ethics involved, and I think these hunters that use it are blinded on this topic because it's such a successful and intoxicating way to hunt. I'm disappointed in the GMAC vote, and I honestly don't understand it. But I think it reinforces what I believe is that hunters that use bait are not going to come forward with a mandate to change it. I think the random survey is a better indication of what majority of people actually think on this issue. I think it's up to the commission for leadership on this issue if it's going to change. Voting would certainly be unpopular with the user groups, but I think, in my opinion, it'd be a good side for the commission to be on, to be advocating for fair chase. Washington is one of only three of the 11 western states that allow baiting. Most of them have been outlawed for a long time. Regulations have been crafted in other states that work and hunters have lived with, and they've been able to harvest game. So in summary, I'm against baiting for the ethics. That's my main point. But a secondary issue is it's a fairness issue to those fair chase hunters who've studied and patterned deer and may have property, then have baiting lure them away to another location. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Jeff Hardesty, please. Bobby?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, of course, I'm BJ, Bobby Thornley. And I've known John for years, and I respect him, but I totally disagree with him on ethics. Ethics, as far as I'm concerned, are in the eyes of the beholder. And if a method is legal, it is fair chase. And I tracked that down in a great big huge dictionary once, because I was wondering myself, just what is fair chase? Okay, GMAC not only debated this the last two meetings, we started debating this thing about a year ago, and we've really gone over and over and over and over the whole darn thing. A suggestion, one of the biggest complaints is guides, persons who guide for a living, who bring in a huge dump load of apples or something and let them rot and so forth. A thought there is that our fishing guides are licensed and regulated. There is no regulation on hunting guides. That might be something for the agency and for the commission to think about. And that could certainly take care of, I think, a lot of the problems. I've baited, I've hunted over bait for probably 40 years since I moved over here and started hunting whitetail. Before that, it was blacktail, and blacktail in those days, you drove thickets in my youth, long ago youth. When I came in, I heard a young man testifying who indicated that putting down some apples, a bunch of apples and so forth, is like a Snickers bar, and the animals keep coming back and they don't know what to do. Animals aren't dumb. Once the bait is not there, they may come in once or twice, but they're gone then and looking for other forage. Also, we're not talking about fawns. We're talking about fawns who were born in the spring and by then are as big as their mothers and hardly ever. They don't even come in together sometimes, but they are independent individuals. The other thing that's been brought up is that it attracts large numbers of deer. I haven't seen that. You may be, if you're lucky, you may bring in more than one or two deer, but you're not going to bring in a whole herd of deer that's going to spread disease. And you've seen Jerry explain the GMAC reasons. We gave a lot of thought to that, and we're very concerned about retention of hunters, allocation. Those are big items and could really, really cause us some trouble. So we recommend against it.
Thank you. Yes,
thank you, Chair Smith. Bobby, am I right? Are you on the GMAC?
Yes, I am. I have been for about, I suppose, 20 years, 25
okay.
years.
I appreciate that service. My question to you is, because I'm having a little trouble with the difference between the random survey and the non-random, and to me, again, as John pointed out, you know, a random survey tells a different story than what's coming, let's say, out of the GMAC recommendation. But I know you debated it heavily, And I was wondering if the question had been put to the GMAC differently, what type of advice you might have given. For instance, if the question was, if you have a choice, ban on baiting altogether or coming up with a solution that works for most people, which one would you have picked? And I would guess you would say, well, you don't want to see a total ban,
but no.
Maybe there's still some common ground between the different viewpoints that the GMAC could consider. Again, if it was given a charge to you to say, well, then what will work between the two, total, you know, keep it as it is or do away with it altogether?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's more time needs to be spent on that question.
That's a very, very good possibility. You know, none of us are cast in stone, but we do like a good humane kill, and that's what we get. And that's terribly important to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Bobby. Jim? And Jeff?
Thank you. I appreciate the commission's responsiveness on this issue. My name is Jeff Hardesty. I wanted to provide for you a perspective of a landowner. I own 100 acres on a migration route from Ineos Mountain to the river, Okanagan River. Like I said, it is on the migration route. I've lived there for 10 years. I've hunted for 20. It's important to me that you know I witness the deer herds. I live amongst them, have for a while, and feel as though I have some qualitative information to provide. I'm also a principal of a high school, and I know what it's like to be in the center of a polarizing issue pretty much on a weekly basis. And so when I'm in that predicament, I always go to our mission and our vision. And so I spent a little time looking at the commission's mission and vision, and it talks a lot about preservation and conservation. And from my back door, I would tell you that excessive baiting practices defy both of those. I'm concerned about this state's lack of a mechanism to determine what preservation means in my backyard. I will tell you by observation, the local herd has, in my opinion, been decimated by excessive baiting practices. The lady here had mentioned that she wonders about deer congregating in large groups. I can assure you, during baiting season, we have tons of deer sitting in front of a bait pile, and I'm talking herds. And when it snows, you can actually see black lines in the snow, and they come to the apple piles like cattle. As far as conservation, under Goal 3, the commission talks about promoting healthy economy and protecting the community character. The mechanism that I'm worried about and our ability to sort of track the amount of deer being taken around bait piles, I'm not so sure that locals in my area would tell you that this excessive practice is protecting our character. I mentioned last year that it's a local joke during hunting season when we start to see semi-trucks of baiting apples coming, and we say, well, it must be deer season now. The other thing I'd like to tell you is that I have three children, two in elementary, one in middle school, and we sat through hunter safety. And I found it hard to explain to my children what they were being taught during hunter safety about stewardship. When I'm teaching them about reading the wind and how to track an animal and not 1,000 yards, there's two very large herds surrounding bait apples getting shot at. And then lastly, I would like to, I appreciate Commissioner Keeney's question about how the survey was framed. I think we can get any feedback we want depending on how the questions are framed, and I had concern with the survey from the very beginning. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Keeney.
Thank you.
Mike.
Thank you, Jeff, for your testimony. Kind of back to my thoughts, from a standpoint where you're coming from, where I think you would approve of disallowing baiting, not having baiting. Do you see a difference between where we, if we were to have some control on that, a volume control or a duration control, that there could be a common ground that, sure, it doesn't meet everybody's needs, but most people would get more out of it.
Yeah, I, you know, again, and usually when you're in a situation where it's a you're very polarized, I think sometimes we have to meet in the middle. When I presented last time, my tact was it's excessive, folks. If you see these piles of apples, and you see the sheer amount of deer surrounding those apples during the migration, it's ludicrous. And you know, so if we were to meet in the middle and reduce that, I think it's a management piece. I think that there are people that will always figure a way around duration and amount. But it would certainly beat what I'm seeing now. And I, again, I live in it. I see it. And I'm, it's just interesting me to hear people's perspective. I'm not sure that they're seeing what I'm seeing, especially when I read what was on that PowerPoint.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, when you talk about in your neck of the woods excessive baiting, is it in... To your knowledge, is that typically done or usually done by guides, or are they individuals, or do you know?
You know, I can only speak to my backyard, and there are several bait piles being placed by guide service.
Further questions?
Thank you, Chair. And one word that you kept bringing up that really resonated with me was access. I have hunted in various places where, yeah, you throw out a wafer of hay, try and get in some oats to try and get them out of the brush. And the ethical shots to me, and I'll fess up, when I'm going on these guided hunts or trophy hunts, and we're wanting to real and to be able to have a good shot and see what we're saying, those situations I don't have any problem with, but like you were talking about the excesses, mm-hmm. and I think that's what the nut comes down to here, is where we're seeing these excesses, and I think that's where we need to be focused on. The 90-some percent is a good practice, but we've got this percent that's screwing it up for the rest of us, and I think that's where focus needs to be. So thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Always a voice of reason and logic. Randy Lospisch, please. Sorry. And Jim.
Thank you again, Commission and Chair. Here on behalf of the Inland Northwest Wildlife Council, everybody's bringing up some really good issues here, some really good points. We basically, I mean, we agree with the department and with the GMAC. I mean, we figure to allow baiting. Part of the issue that we had and we discussed in our boardroom was the term bait. Everybody keeps talking about apples. But when you look at the bear regulations, baiting does not just describe food, which translated over to big game as in deer and elk. I mean, you're talking mock scrapes, rattles, calls, scents, you name it. That's all bait, an attractant. So when defining baiting for this purpose, I'm hoping we're only discussing food items on the table. But with that being said, the council's stand is that we are in favor of baiting. And in the boardroom, there were heavy concerns in regards to commercial baiting. And the fact that we've heard about the dump trucks and the semis full of apples, so on and so forth. There was a lot of discussion about that, and the outcome was not favorable for commercial baiting or large quantities of bait. For the normal individual hunter, shouldn't be an issue, like you were saying. You know, you bring in a bucket of apples or a chunk of hay or whatever, you know, bucket of corn, throw it out there. You're hoping to get those deer out there so you can make a clean and ethical shot on these animals. And we're for that. But we had heavy concerns about the excess or commercialized view of it. Okay?
Thank you, Jim. Oh, yep.
Sorry. Commissioner, or Chair Smith. I just have a lot of questions. Mic's on. Okay, Jim. I'm having a little difficulty in what you're saying. I understand. It seems like the GMAC and the Inland Northwest Wildlife Council are saying, like, well, if we can't come up with a better way to control the excess, let's just keep doing it. And to me, that bothers me. It seems like we've identified a problem, and yet because we haven't identified how we're going to control that problem, let's just keep the problem rolling. So my question is, as defined in this material we have, baiting is any salt, grain, fruit, hay, or other food-based attractants. So does away. It's not all the things you were mentioning, and there's also an exemption for agricultural lands and whatnot.
Right.
Could the, in your opinion, the organizations that you serve on go with a 10-gallon limit, let's say, or some limit that's reasonable, if law enforcement can get their heads around how to enforce it?
Yeah, I think, and you bring up a good point there. I think enforcement is the real issue there. How they're going to do it, I mean, yeah, that's up to them, but I really don't know how they're going to do it. But is there a way to meet in the middle? There's a way to meet in the middle for everything. I just think at this time, because it was, I mean, literally it came up rather quickly and has come to a head, so to speak, on this go-around, leave it as status quo, but maybe entertain some more conversations within this next three-year package or whatever it is to maybe define or mold that.
Okay. I think that's where I'm essentially heading in my own thought process, too, because I think any enforcement person could tell the difference between a pile of apples bin size versus pile of apple 5-gallon bucket size.
Right.
I mean, now, in a few pictures with a 5-gallon bucket on either one would be, it seems to me, you know, fairly plausible as to one's not acceptable and one is. And so continuing the discussion, let me rephrase this, rushing into the decision doesn't necessarily make the right decision.
Right.
And I'm starting to think more and more that presented in the right way to various groups with the right questions, with the right series of variabilities and ways we could look at this to limit the excess, we could come out in October with a rule change. Just because it doesn't make this pamphlet isn't a driving force.
Right. Can I address that, what you were just kind of talking about, the 5-gallon bucket thing? I, too, live amongst the animals. I have 6 acres in Spokane, and it's not a lot, but it's a really, really good 6 acres. And I live in between food areas, water, apple trees, all of that. My concern would be this. I go out and I drop a 5-gallon bucket of apples. There's nights where deer don't come in. Why? I don't know. They're off doing their own thing, whatever. Now I've got 5 gallons or less of apples out there. Day two comes around. I have another hunter come over to my house. He's got his 5 gallons of bucket, 5 gallons of apples, and he throws them out there. Now you've just created almost a double limit, but technically it wasn't his, and or the deer didn't eat them, or there's a bunch of issues there that, you know, that's a very, very fine defining line that you're looking at. You know, did he break the law? Did I break the law? So, yeah, there's a lot of, and that's why I say, I think there's more conversation that needs to be made on this, if any changes to be made to it, and exactly what that would be. So, yeah. Okay?
Thank you, Jim.
Sure.
Chris McCarthy, please. And Randy, how do you say?
Lossbeck. Randy Lossbeck.
You lost an umlaut along there somewhere, didn't you?
Thanks for the opportunity, and Mr. Holtz-Miller, I appreciate your last comment. I'm that little guy. I understand that the big bend seemed to be the issue, but I would disagree with the statement that there's a problem. And the reason there isn't a problem is your biologists haven't said there is. It's a social problem. I'm a bow hunter. I've been a bow hunter for 26 years. Bow hunting is my number one recreational passion, and I don't want you to take that away from me. Why? Because there is no science, no research to suggest a change is needed. The department states as much in each and every proposal. It is neither the job nor the responsibility of the commission to address social issues. I can't believe that you put it's a social issue in print and are talking about it. You have to, you must make these decisions based on research and science. This is, in fact, a legislative directive to your commission. You have a mandate from the legislature to use science to make decisions. You, the department, state that science is the determining factor in your mission statement, your goals, and your 2015-21 game management plan, and in the final whitetail management plan. It's unimaginable to me that you as commissioners or your biologists would come up with a thought or a notion or an idea based on complaints and say, we've got a problem. The professors and peers and teachers of your biologists would turn in their graves and disown them for just saying, we need to talk about this, this is a social problem, and then make a decision without science. How dare you consider changing my life, taking away my passion, because someone does not want me to do things the way I've been doing it. Who are these people? People that bait don't hurt wildlife. They do not hurt wildlife management. They do not hurt other hunters. This is not a safety issue. This is a group of people that want or are demanding that I think like them, hunt like them, feel like them, dress like them, eat like them, pray like them. You know, I don't know who these people are. I really don't. We do not have to hunt the same. We are all hunters. We all enjoy the outdoor experience. Some hunters use a bow. Some only hunt with a muzzleloader. Some use a modern ultramag. Some still hunt. Some walk 10 miles a day. Others sit under the same tree that their dad sat under. We all have our own way. I'm a bow hunter. I bait. I follow the law. I'm a good citizen. The legislature does not and will not direct the commission to change rules because someone is upset about how I hunt. So, to wrap it up, we as hunters, outdoorsmen, and outdoors women should not beat each other up. And if the department and commissioners become the forum for opinions, comments, and social issues, not science and research, hunting and fishing is in big trouble.
David Barkman, please. And Chris, it's your turn.
Thank you, Commission, for allowing me the time to speak. And first off, I have a couple items. I apologize, I was running later, and the agenda's a little ahead of schedule. I missed the PowerPoint presentation, but I have read the proposals and the published documents. Secondly, I agree wholeheartedly with the last gentleman that just spoke regarding not changing laws, making laws based on social items. Wildlife laws should be based on science and fact, proven fact in the science biology field, not on what a person or a group of people feel or think is right or wrong for the animals. It should be science-based. And secondly, I don't agree with the proposed limitation of 10 gallons, mostly because I don't feel it's enforceable in most ways or shapes. The apples, sure, you can pick up apples and put them in a bucket, a 10-gallon bucket, a 5-gallon bucket, and a certain amount will fit. How would that work with alfalfa? I can take a compressed bale of alfalfa and shove it into a bucket, but the minute I put it in the field, cut the bands off it, it expands to 5, maybe 10 times its original volume. How is anybody going to know and enforce that, yeah, that in fact was 10 gallons? It spread out to a 10-foot circle that's a foot deep maybe. And along those lines is a deer is not going to eat every strand of alfalfa. So if that limit were to be implemented and I have alfalfa that's old, wet, the deer aren't going to eat it, do I need to clean that up and put 10 gallons of new? Would that count as my 10 gallons? So there's enforceability issues, I feel. I rifle hunt, I bow hunt, I muzzleloader hunt, I hunt over bait, I'm not afraid to say it. I say it to non-hunters. I explain my points, my reasoning, my effectiveness. I still hunt, I stalk hunt, I do it all. Any opportunity I can get, I'm out in the field. And I think personally that putting limits on these items, banning something for a social issue is not good for anybody. It's not good for the people coming into the sport. It's not good for the people that have been doing in the outdoor activities for their whole lives. So I'm just here stating my opinion to keep it status quo. Thank you.
Thank you. Well said. Jared Gibbons, please. And David?
Yes.
Your turn.
My name is David Bartrand. I've hunted pretty much all my life. I had a Washington hunting license once in the last 10 years because of the kind of my overarching philosophy about hunting in this state. It usually comes up that in hunting camp you need to be an attorney to hunt. I'm against anything where you end up with a bunch of picayune-ish rules. You go hunting for recreation. Therefore, I would say I would either leave the status quo or ban it altogether, come up with something clean. But, you know, I would feel like saying you can't bait, I would be trying to impose my morality on other people. Just because somebody doesn't want to do something the way I do, I don't think I should be able to tell them not to. My too many rule changes and gray areas in the law. But my three specific issues, I've got four boys that I've tried to train all of them up to hunt. I encourage them all to go bow hunting. I said, hey, it looks like you've got more opportunities that way than you do rifle hunting. I'm a inveterate rifle hunter. I might add that I hunt in Idaho now. I don't bother with this state anymore. But it comes down to, I can't even get my boys interested in bow hunting, and baiting might be a way that I could give them more opportunities to hunt. The rifle hunting opportunities are already so poor for my kids. They get tired of going up and shooting a doe. I think it's a youth recruitment issue, and, you're losing the youth as far as hunting. The percentage of license holders in this state has maybe stayed the same or gone down as the population has increased. That should tell you something. It's also a poor man's access issue. A poor man that can't afford to hire a guide, can't afford to rent an expensive, chunk of land to go hunting on, he can still take his bait, and go out there and have an opportunity. Hunting in this state particularly is rapidly becoming an elitist sport, and you've always said you were against that. And I might also add that it might be a handicapped hunting issue, too. I just recently fell into this situation, so don't think, I'm the guy that goes out and hunts 20 miles a day on foot, if I had to, viewing it from this, I could still go out and hunt over bait if I wanted to. If hunting was open and free enough with a few clear-cut rules in this state, you wouldn't need special handicapped hunter programs. Just way too many rules. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a subject for this day, sir, but you brought up a point that's been brought up to me many, many times in my career, and that the complexities of rules on behalf of hunting and fishing in this state have driven many, many people out of the sport. I'm on the west side. My day job is deals with boats most often. And I've had two lawyers in my office in a screaming match over what the hell did the regulations say. So at some point in time, I'd like to put on the agenda to hear back on why we're driving constituents out of this state to other states and provinces for hunting and fishing opportunities. Perhaps we can simplify this and make it better for all.
Thank you.
Matt Marsh. Jared, take it away.
Hi. I've come here learning a lot and seeing the GMAC and from the science background on doing these things. I am an outfitter. I own and operate Okanagan Valley Guide Service out of OMAC. I am the guy that brings people into the state to hunt over bait for late archery, which is a big sought-off thing in our state. Hunting deer over the into migration. Over bait. Our conditions up in our area have allowed us to not be able to stalk deer sometimes in the winter months, having snow, having unethical shots, shooting 60 to 100 yards, which there is a few people out there that do make those shots and give bow hunters a bad name in doing that. I'm going to go to a different standpoint from an outfitter standpoint on the economic issue that we'd have on this if we banned baiting. Me alone, I've done TV shows over the last 7 years to bring people into the state to hunt the state of Washington. I do trade shows all throughout the state, Oregon, all over the place, to recruit people to come to the state of Washington for out-of-state sales in this state. Me alone, I do at least 20 to 25 out-of-state hunters a year. Now, these people come to the state, you know, tag sales for an out-of-state tag is $430. A lot of them have not booked with me this year just because they are waiting to see if this baiting ban if it's going to pass or not pass. It is a good management tool that we use. I do hunt all private land that I hunt on, and this is what I do. You know, now the issue of, get back to the ethical, or not ethical, but sorry, I wish I had more than 3 minutes to talk. just alone, I mean, 20 people, 430 a year, that's $8,600 in tag sales. The local economy that will hurt and hurt from this, the hotels that I use. I run 50 guys a year, not all hunting over bait, but just hunting, period. I spend over $12,500 in hotels and bed and breakfasts. What those people spend in sporting goods stores to come hunt in this area because of the baiting and hunting in our great state that we have. I mean, just tourism alone, these people I bring in from out of state, they bring their families back because they see what great amount of deer that we do have in this area. They bring their families back and fish and hunt and everything else after hunting with me. So I'm actually bringing a lot of economy into this state and everything, which we would lose if we stopped the part of baiting and everything. Talking about deer populations, thinking that it's going to affect our deer population, the science end of it. I have actually talked to Scott Fipkin that does the surveys and everything. Since there is no actual data and everything, but I can quote him, and he said I could quote him saying that our deer populations are staying steady to increasing. There is no scientific evidence why we should stop what we have already been doing.
Well, for one reason, I want to ask you a question so you have a little more time if you choose to say.
Thank you.
But I do have a question for you, and I've asked several others because there seems to be different sides of this. And as someone that is using large volumes of bait, do you see a way that the volume could be discussed or even duration? I know there's been some thoughts that, well, baiting that occurs too late into the season, you know, into the wintertime, or baiting that occurs too early that's drawing animals in. You know, those seem to be the tools, either frequency, timing, or duration, that could be modified. And I'd like to ask if you see a way that, through that from your standpoint. And secondly, I do believe the research it would take to show that there's any effect on baiting on what a deer eats and the effect on that particular deer or herd's health, it will never happen. You know, we have to move ahead at some time with decisions that I don't believe are just social, but I believe there are some biological reasons that maybe, you know, will never become apparent, you know, just because of the way that research is too hard to get. So back to the question, though, for you, and allow you some more time to speak to that.
Sure.
You see a way that quantities could be restricted enough and keep the economy that you're talking about.
Sure. Me being this was my profession, I spend every single day in the outdoors during the hunting season. I am very fortunate to hunt in great migration and great deer population areas to where I do see, you know, in a typical day, I'll see 100 to 200 deer a day. I hunt in the sagebrush, I hunt in the open country and the Okanagan. So ways, if I would happen to regulate this in any type of thing, and we do not have any background that's saying that the apples, which I do bait with, and hay that I do bait with, affect the deer population, and is this hurting us, or are they coming in just because it's like a candy bar? Maybe limit it to maybe 15 days or so, okay? You know, deer season up there for the migration starts on the November 21st, which is what my major season that I guide. Maybe limit it to starting baiting 5 days prior, okay? Now, limiting it to a 10-gallon, 2 5-gallon buckets. Now, since I'm in a big high-traffic deer area, putting out a 5-gallon bucket, I almost got a laugh. That's going to be gone in 30 minutes, okay? I do hunt. Now, baiting is not the only thing that these deer feed on, okay? We have a ton of bitter brush up in our area, which consists of a major part of the deer diet. Okay, I think it's like 75% of the deer's diet. Okay, we're in these big migration areas where it have this, and do they come running into these apple piles? Okay, I've seen deer feed on the hillside for hours and hours and hours, and then all of a sudden, oh, they come on down to the apple pile. And when they are only there from 2 to 5 minutes max. So it's not like they are sitting there and they are gorging themselves on these apples. It is giving our hunters a clean, ethical opportunity chance at harvesting a deer. So limiting the amount of baiting, in my standpoint, if I was only to put out 10 gallons of apples, my fuel bill would triple. I would have to put out more apples just because I'm in a high volume of deer area where one deer comes in, feeds on it for 2, 3, 5 minutes and leaves, where another one, and then it goes off and feeds on bitter brush. They are not coming in just to feed on apples. It is just giving us hunters an opportunity to have a harvest on that animal.
So if a discussion was to continue on this and you were involved in it, you'd be looking at duration as
sure.
and timing of that allowed baiting, not necessarily the volume. Because one of the things I'm worried about, honestly, is how non-hunters view baiting.
Sure.
And you know, that can go against the hunting population in a heartbeat, you know, if their perception is that baiting is unfair chase and whatnot. You know, all hunters, and I'm a hunter, you know, could stand to lose, you know, some of the things that we accept.
Sure.
So I think it deserves a full discussion, and I'm of the opinion right now that we haven't given it enough time. Why rush into something that has been one way for how many years?
Exactly.
And yet I believe the discussion needs to continue, and I would appreciate your input to it and the other folks that have come here today too.
Can I continue to say some things? On the part of just having youth and disabled hunters, me being an outfitter, I get a lot of people. Just yesterday I got a call from a guy that works at Microsoft that is 44 years old. He's always wanted to hunt and finally has the opportunity to hunt. He wants to go bow hunting. And he doesn't know a thing about it, taking him out into the hills and being loud and everything. He's probably not going to get an opportunity to harvest a deer and everything. Taking a 44-year-old that has never hunted in his life to get within 15 yards on a spot-and-stalk mule deer, he's out for a good adventure and most likely is not going to harvest a deer. To increase his tag sales, I mean, he'll go out there and say, well, yeah, I saw a deer, but I didn't harvest a deer. If you have the opportunity to have a guy in a blind, and which we make our bait piles 15 yards from, which we will get a clean, ethical shot. He's just not seeing the bucks that come in. He's seeing numbers of deer, thinking and seeing the habits of how these deer act and react, and they are absorbing this. Just not this guy that's 44 years old that's booking a hunt with me. I'm having my daughter, who shot her first deer at 10 years old, which there's no way that she can hike up and down those hills to harvest a deer, but she is hooked for life because she had deer 5 yards from her, 10 yards from her, seeing the 2 points, little 2x1s coming in, and the excitement seeing my daughter, seeing these deer so close because we are baiting. That my daughter is a hunter for life, and I guaranteed having those hunters come up, and even first time 25, 30 year olds coming out and hunting, seeing these guys up close and personal, are going to hook these people for life, and you will have tag sales for life.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.
Brad Harshman, again, please. And Matt, it's your turn.
Thank you again for this other opportunity. I spoke this morning about baiting deer and elk. I respect the outfitter guide business immensely because my family comes from a well-respected outfitter guide background in Montana. And I strive to teach my two sons proper fair chase methods, hunter ethics, and moral values. I've got a packet of pictures to show that you'll see later today. But, you know, the comment of excessive, this shows the... in the picture, it shows tons and tons of apple bins, empty apple bins, for that sheer purpose of harvesting deer, especially during the late season. To my knowledge, there are at least 4 outfitters in the north part of Okanagan County, and all of them have this practice of baiting in large degrees. And it's not only the outfitters. I'm not picking on outfitters by any means. It's it's spread from the outfitters to the individuals, to those large hunting groups. The practice now is who can stockpile the most apples and apple bins. And I speak to apples because that's the bait I'm primarily seeing up in the Okanagan. I have spoken with agency biologists, some of the same ones that were just mentioned, and I asked the specific question, are apples a good source and responsible source of food in the months, especially leading up into winter? And those comments are always no. Now, there was a comment earlier about scientific studies. You know, I know all too well about scientific studies and how long they take. So to have a statement that there's no scientific evidence at this time, I would agree with that. There is a Nevada Department of Wildlife publication out there that talks to what deer need as far as a food source. Deer ruminants, so they have a multi-chambered stomach that's very complex, and they need time for those guts to transition based on what they're feeding on. And to feed them a source of food similar to apples goes back to my protein content, that they're just not getting what they need. And they're feeding in a large standpoint right before that winter time period. So, again, thank you for your time, and I'd answer any questions.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
And now calling up Matt Hegarty. And Brad, your 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you again. I'd like to say that I'm not a baiter. I do not hunt over bait. Doesn't mean I don't want to do it in the future. I do have a 7-year-old daughter, and I am trying to get her more involved in hunting. I'm primarily a waterfowl hunter, so I already know I can't bait, and I appreciate and respect that. Because I do see what the birds can do when they are baited or over a high food source or a high location with a lot of food. But I want to say that not all bait is bad. I know Mr. Matt or Marsh or whatever his name is did speak about the negative effects of apples. And I also like to turn the tables on the positive effects of baiting, such as using salt blocks with selenium. Selenium is supposed to be the mineral that is very important for our mule deer to breed and have successful offspring. A lot of our salt blocks that you can buy at Ranch and Home, Big R, whatever, does have that mineral that's available. It's a trace element. So you think about when hunters go out and use these type of blocks, sure, they might kill their one deer, their one elk over that block, but how many other deer and elk actually get to use or get to take in that mineral content and help them out, help their system, and help the population in general? So with that said, I just don't want to see baiting being taken away entirely. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad. Bill Madison. That's your turn.
Okay. Thanks for taking your guys' time to have a public comment where everybody can come in and speak. I'm not a guide, an outfitter. I'm just a hunter. I've hunted over bait 2 days in 25 years. My average day, you know, I walk 5 to 10 miles. I have a son. He's a year old. He's not going to be able to go out and walk 5 or 10 miles in a day with me till he's probably 15 years old, I'm betting, in the country that I'm hunting. My wife, we want to take him out, set up a ground blind, bait. Not yet. Probably when he's 3, I'm going to start taking him out. He can move around. I can have snacks in there. He can be comfortable. I can show him the difference between a white-tailed doe, a mule deer doe. I can show him how to count points on a deer to see what's legal. Am I ever going to shoot a deer over bait? I bet you in 25 years I could come in here and look, any of you, if you're still with us, and say I have not shot a deer over bait, But I want, my wife would be here right now, but I didn't want you guys to listen to a one-year-old run around, and she would be giving you the same speech I am today, so I'm actually speaking for two. But anyhow, with that, I want to be able to set the hook for my son on hunting while he's at a young age. I don't want him sitting in the house playing Nintendo games. You know, I want him to go out, hunt, enjoy outdoors. In a day, he might see a moose. He might see a deer. He might see a black bear. You know, he might see deer. The 2 days that I did hunt over bait a few years ago, I seen nothing. I had nothing come in. You know, it's not, I was bored. It's really not for me. But what I do want, and any of the rules that I've seen that have been proposed other than the no change, which is what I'm for, I seen that there was one of the rules for youth that wouldn't allow me to do what I want to do. I want him to see his mom, who also can't keep up with me. I want to have him see the animals and see her harvest deer over bait, which she has not yet, but that's my plan. If there's a rule change, you know, I feel that's taken that away from me. Because, like I say, I want to go out and be successful. That's important to me in hunting. And anyways, you know, to take a 3 to a 12-year-old out is going to slow that down. I'm definitely going to take him out as soon as he can pass, and that's going to, you know, down our success rate for sure. But even before he can hunt, I want to teach him, you know, how to identify a legal animal, different species, and just to enjoy the outdoors, and I feel that leaving baiting in effect will do that. Thank you for your time.
Good timing. You should write that down. Very well said as a father. So calling up Rick Sherrod, and Bill, it's your turn.
Well, good morning. Bill Manson is my name. I live in Seattle, Washington. I hear a lot of passion here today in the room, and I've seen this before. When there's real passion, it shows up like this, and there's a reason for it. One of the things I did a little research yesterday on finding out when Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife first started out, and their first game warden, you probably know all this, was in 1915. And all that time, this issue has come up before. I remember Dave Ware, we talked about this about 10, 12 years ago, and it was here before, and it came down to the ethical issue. And ethical issue being, you want to choose your weapon as a bow, a crossbow, a rifle that can shoot 400 yards. A bow hunter needs to, and I'm a bow hunter, lifelong bow hunter, 1962, Fred Bear, recurve.
Michigan.
So anyway, it's been a real pleasure here, and I'm hearing all these statements and everything. Well, I have to say, I get off the cuff, and I don't want to get too far along because I want to tell you a story, if time permits. The mass baiting is a concern. It can create a lot of things that, you know, the disease thing, it's coming this way. If you read some of the issues in the books that are coming out on the chronic wasting disease, but we won't get into that. I hunt public land only in Washington. I employ a tree stand or a ground blind. I hunt alone. I use apples, alfalfa, and salt to attract big game over the last 15 years, probably more. I am not the 15 or the 20-year-old Marine I used to be. I can't go as fast as I can, so it gives me a little better. So what can I do? Why do I hunt? It allows me to be selective in picking out the animal. I don't shoot, you know, calves and fawns. I want to get the right one that doesn't have a baby with it. That's one thing. It's a positive thing. It gives them an opportunity for a clean kill. Most of my shots are inside. I can't remember the last time. I think 23 yards a couple of years ago I took an animal, and the rest of them are all inside, 10, 12 yards. They're close. Even me, I can hit them at that range, right in the spot. It does give me a better chance to harvest an animal. There's no question about that. And I like that part of it, but here I am, a senior citizen, and I can still climb the tree stand as long as my wife will allow it. And my wife loves eating big game and wild game and fish and everything, so she's supporting me on that. While it does give me a better chance, I personally have not taken a shot in the last 2 years and hunting 20 to 25 days a year in the tree stand, not the whole day. You know, tree stand, you don't do that. And I just haven't had the shot. That's all there is to it. And one of the things, that the animals have taught me, they've switched over in the last 10 years. They're coming in the dark and taking my offerings. So last year, this guy here says, get a portable radio. Put it out. I did it. I put out a Mexican music station 5 feet away from the apples on the tree and the sweet cob. They came in and ate every bit of it. And the music was playing all night when I got there the next morning. That's a true story. I'm done. I can't say anymore, can I?
No, that's good.
But anyway, I'll get out here because there's a lot of people here. I want to thank Convention for
that's
your
the most
dedication.
Unique punchline I've heard for a
while. It's great.
Thank you.
Maybe you should try German polka music next time.
Leave some beer for me. Al Rinaldi. And Rick, your time is starting.
I just want to say that I'm in favor of no change. I think, as Mr. Keeney mentioned earlier, we don't need a knee-jerk reaction to a big social thing here. So I've been baiting whitetails in the Sherman Unit 101 for 6 years. I haven't taken an animal in that 6 years, so I'm either a real bad baiter or I just love being out there. I see things. This year I averaged 11 hours a day in a tree stand, 2-degree temperatures. At the most, I'd have 2, 3, 4 animals in at a time. And once again, like I said, I still have not taken an animal. I could have taken an animal every one of those years and chose not to. I'm not a trophy hunter, but I like looking at big antlers on the wall. I'm a taxidermist. It's something that I can write off everything. So I want to shoot the biggest animal I can, and I've passed up some nice, you know, 4 points and whatnot. But the things that I see when I'm out there, it brings me back. If it was all about the kill, I would have quit hunting a long time ago. So a couple things that I've heard today. Sounds like we have different issues in different parts of the state. Where I hunt, I don't see big migrations. I don't think the whitetails necessarily migrate the way the mule deer do. And like I said, I maybe see between my trail cameras and what I'm visibly seeing, I may see 4 animals in there at a time, if at all, in a day, day set. So, like I said, I think we have different issues in different parts of the state. As far as the limiting the amounts of bait, I live outside of Yakima. It's a 5.5-hour drive to where my tree stand is. If I put out a 5-gallon bucket of apples, chances are they're going to be gone before I'm, you know, an hour towards home. So it's not feasible for something like that. So I appreciate your guys' time and letting me speak, and I'll turn it over to the next gentleman.
Thank you, Rick. And the last one we'll call up, Marcus Loik. And take it away, Al.
Thank you. Members of the commission, my name is Al Rinaldi. I have a handout that I left for you folks, so I won't go over these points. Maybe you can see it later.
It'll be distributed.
That's fine. I'm a director of Washington State Bowhunters. I'm one of the founders of Washington State Bowhunters, founded in 1976. I'm one of the original members of the Resource Allocation Committee, where we started the choice of weapons way back. I've been kind of not as active as I was before. I'm retired now, so they're trying to get me to work a little harder, as you can tell by the gray hair. You heard from Todd Johnson yesterday, our president, real nice young man. He's doing a good job. Obviously, we're not for any changes in the baiting system. I could tell you as a little history here, you know, the average hunter can't afford to hunt private land. They can't afford to pay for things. I can afford it. I've been in other states. It cost me $1,000 to go to Oregon for deer and elk, just a license. It cost me $1,000 to go to Montana. But the average hunter doesn't have that kind of money. He doesn't have the ability to hunt on private land where you have food crops and you have legal means of attracting animals. So we have to think about that. And the guys that I hunt with, I've hunted since 1969 with a bow. I've taken many animals. I can tell you I spend a lot of hours in tree stands without seeing an animal. I don't know where all these migrations are, but it's not where I'm hunting, I'll tell you that. Last year, I was able to take a deer. It took its first one in 4 years. We spent a lot of time. But here's the main thing. I have two grandsons, 14 and 13, and I take them hunting. They live for this. They live all year for this. They're not computer nerds. They're not any of these nerds. They're outdoor kids. We live in Cleveland, Washington. And they live for the opportunity to go hunting with Grandpa, up in the, usually in the whitetail country. They live for that opportunity. That's all they think about. We have a range that we shoot our bows all the time. And I can tell you that if we don't have baiting, they don't have the chance to learn as they have about these animals. So, and the other thing is I can't negotiate the terrain anymore. I think I can, but I can't. I've hunted mountain goats. I've hunted bighorn sheep. I took the first bighorn sheep in the state of Washington. I've killed two mountain goats. I can't even climb those mountains now. But I can sit in a tree stand over a bait and hopefully get an animal. So I'm asking you folks to consider that. My concern is when you start regulating, and I respect what you said about, you know, can we regulate the real problem areas? I was a trial lawyer. I was a prosecutor. I know how it's difficult to set standards that applies to everyone. And real quickly, I'm not trying to impress anybody. I'm not doing that at all. I'm retired now. I'm nobody now. But I had a son that was killed in 1990 with a handgun that was stolen. He was 24 years old. I'm not against handguns. I'm a proponent of handguns. I'm a proponent of the right to bear arms. So when you start restricting, this is where you get into problems. Thank you, gentlemen. Have questions?
Mr. Carpenter. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Rinaldi.
Thank you,
some interesting history there. The one thing that you could help us with, that we struggle with, is exactly what you've done with your grandsons to get them outdoors. So if you have any insight into that, we'd like to hear that.
I've taken their Nexus, and I've taken all the Kindles away from them, and they're outdoors all day long, and they play sports. And I tell you, they're healthy kids. They're strong as an ox, and thank God they can help me put up the tree stands. Thank you, gentlemen. Good luck
you,
on
sir.
This issue.
Marcus, you're the last.
Yeah. Marcus Luke here. I'm from Ellensburg, Washington. Thank you, Commission, for having me here. Just a couple of points I wanted to make on your proposals. One was the ranch land limitations, where cattle ranchers will be still allowed to put their salt out to keep their cattle in the area. But they also graze in public land, like the Nanham Forest. They put out hundreds of pounds of salt to keep their cattle in the area where they want to retrieve them in a fall and bring back down out of the mountains. So if you put a limitation on that, what will a hunter have to do to, you know, be able to find that spot, stay away from it, and then also the water source near that? So it's going to be an area of influence. One of the guys talked earlier about not being able to hunt for waterfowl. So I'm a waterfowl hunter also, and you can't hunt the area of influence. So then that's going to limit your area in public land and where you can hunt if you ban the baiting. Also, there's the other issue is, say, the 10-gallon limit. If Joe and John know of an area where there's a 400-point bull and they're going to hunt that area, and one of them could go out there and put 50 gallons of bait, and that area would then be illegal to hunt for the other person. So you're going to come up with that issue. I did some research on a website called Lucky Buck. They make a product that a lot of people use for baiting. So they did the research on all the states which allow and disallow baiting. It's basically 50-50 across the country. I know Michigan and Wisconsin, I've hunted both of those states. They limit it to 2 gallons. That's mainly for CWD because it does bring deer into an area, concentrate them, and it's fast when they're in a concentrated area. Michigan says you can put out 2 gallons. It's got to be spread over a 10 by 10 area. Wisconsin is 2 gallons on a 40-acre plot. So there are limitations that are effective in other states. But then you run into the issue of if one person puts more out, you got to know where that bait is. You can't hunt near it. it's going to be an enforcement issue that's going to be really, really tough to enforce. And then, so then another issue I thought of was the cost of baiting. The outfitter uses bait in a high volume. Is it a cost issue between the person that doesn't want baiting? Can they not go get the apples? But I called a couple of the apple companies at Evans in Yakima. You can go get a truckload of apples for free. So it can't be a cost issue. If the other person would want to bait, you can go get the apples for free. So that's, you know, if for one person to complain and try and stop baiting, what's the real issue? It's, like many have said here, it's a social issue, not an ethical or a hunting way, shape, or form. So that's all I have.
Thank you, Matt. Using the chair's prerogative to do a short editorial comment, you know, I've been on the commission for a few years now, and more often than not, the testimony that we receive on any issue is polarizing, because sometimes the finding that common ground is rather difficult. And more often than not, unfortunately, sometimes anger takes over, emotion takes over in a negative way that is not beneficial for us trying to ascertain the right thing to do in the facts. And you see the rooms being polarized, and it's a rather tense situation. Hence, we have our fine officers normally in attendance, and that's not for without reason. But today, I compliment all of you. The every speaker, every person that gave testimony was done in a very logical, rational, from the heart. So I compliment you. This was very beneficial and very enlightening. And I also compliment you for thinking about the next generation of sports people, because that's so critical. And to hear all of those comments as a father, as a grandfather now, it makes me redouble my efforts. But thank you for everything. And I agree with everything that was said today. did you want to say something?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Smith. I agree with Chair Smith. We call him a silver-haired chair now. As of last night at dinner. Anyway, or it's better than calling him Madam Chair.
Which probably didn't translate
well. Inside joke. Anyway, I really appreciate the discussion. And I live where a lot of this is going on, and I see things that are happening, and I hear from people about this. I have friends and neighbors on all sides of this issue, really. But I really appreciated the discussion, because it brings up things you hadn't thought of, you know, from whatever side you're thinking about it. And I'm a little worried that we're trying to rush this, and there's some things that keep popping up in my mind. Well, for instance, if there's only 3 of the 11 states that have still allowed baiting, why is that? Why did 8 other states decide against it and pass regulations from a social, ethical, or biological reason? I'd like to know why they did that. I know our staff has put a lot of time into this, and they hate hearing that we won't right now make a decision, but I just tend to feel that we need more information to make a good, sound decision. I feel the people that I heard talk here today, if you locked them in this room and took away the key for about 2 days, they might come up with some of those solutions together. And I feel that maybe the questions weren't put out there in a way that had groups that did consider it and consider it thoughtfully, the GMAC and others, you know, might come up with some ideas that we haven't thought of. I think enforcement needs to be pulled in more, because what I see is an option presented to the commission for 10 gallons, and yet it says it could be problematic. Well, Mr. Rivali made a good point. You know, if we make a regulation that becomes problematic, you know, have we really done service to the public or the people that are wanting to hunt in our state? So, and then from a personal standpoint, I'm gone at April's meeting, and we don't have a meeting in May. And for trying to get this done by this year's pamphlet in June, you know, it just feels pressured and rushed. And if we've gone this long allowing baiting in our state, it doesn't hurt to take more time to make a thorough, thoughtful decision, even if it takes another year. And I think if we've made a better decision and we had good consensus around that, you know, maybe it could be made before this hunting season, maybe not. But that's just kind of where I'm at now, is that, you know, I was one of the commissioners that heard a lot about this from people in my district. I've been talking to people. I have neighbors that bait. I have neighbors that don't. I have friends on both sides of the issue. I have bow hunter friends and rifle friends, and they all have different opinions. I also want to mention, it really becomes clear that your perception on baiting comes from your experience, and that's different for every hunter. And we heard people that hunt for 4 years and haven't got a shot. We hear people that see herds and herds of deer coming into bait, you know, so there are differences in our perceptions, and we have to get around that somehow with something that stands up if we're going to make a change. So I would be suggesting, I guess, to the commission that we don't rush this. If we take a little more time and gather some more data, so be it.
Any further comments?
And Mr. Rinaldi, you mentioned Fred Bear. I bought my first bow in 1962 in Grayling, Michigan, from Fred Bear. Laminated recurve. So that's a name I hadn't heard for many decades now. But good memories. Thank you. We will now be moving on to item 23, cougar hunting seasons and regulations. This is a briefing and public hearing as well. And we're welcoming for the first time Dr. Martello. Dr. Donnie.
No, I think they just bumped it.
Tammy? Huh? No, we'll do one more and then take a break. We talked about it.
Okay.
You want it now? Okay, Donnie, let Nate. No. Yeah, do it now, yeah. All right. Before we go into number 23, the whole process of how what we're talking about evolves, I thought that might be beneficial to see how, why, when, and if the change is available to us by Nate Pamplin. So, Nate, take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Commissioners and Director Unsworth. I just wanted to kind of follow up from what I heard from the Chair and Commissioner Caney about what's next and some possible options for the Commission's consideration. So we were asked to take a look at the baiting issue. We worked over the past 9 months. We presented three options. As far as draft rules, and as Dr. Nelson indicated, a number of other draft proposals were vetted with enforcement, with the public, with our Attorney General's office, and then pulled as well. And, of course, the fourth option being status quo of not adopting a restriction. We're scheduled for a decision for April. And this would align with us to be able to include, if a rule was adopted, to be able to include that in the hunting pamphlet for this fall. If the commission, and we also opened up the full range of spectrum of options. So there's certainly some homework that we could do between now and April to try to come up with a rule that meets your all's interests of what your the feedback that you've heard. And then be able to present that as a floor change for the April vote. The commission could elect to direct staff to continue to work this issue, not take action in April, and we bring this back for the next March-April cycle, or you could delay it for a three-year package issue in recognition of the amount of work that goes into this effort and opening up things such as hunting restrictions rather than doing the annual tweaking of permits. So just wanted to provide some options, and I know we can talk further on a conference call, but the next meeting is clock's ticking. So.
Right. Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nate, thanks for explaining that. It's a really complex, passionate issue. You hear certainly different perspectives from the hunters than you do from the non-consumptive folks, and that's all fair and reasonable. I think the issue for me, and I'll just speak my mind, if I had to vote for it now, I would vote for no change. But in the fairness to everyone involved, if it were my meeting to run and chair, I would postpone it for 3 years and get all the work to get the necessary data together, get the public's involvement in not such a rush scenario, but more deliberate, and then review it at the next cycle. So for what it's worth, that's my view of the world.
And we can pick it up on the conference call. But
thank you, sir.
Thank you, Nate.